My name is Dr. Jenny Holland. I have been a psychologist in private practice for 15 years in Sonoma County. I want to thank you for showing up today, being seen, and educating yourself. That is taking an action toward protecting the public from harm. Many of you here today are mental health professionals, and all of us here today are concerned citizens. As mental health professionals, many of us are used to taking a role in the advancement and welfare of others on a daily basis through our capacity to educate, evaluate, empathize, and advocate. For the most part, our work is done on a smaller scale, one-on-one in the safety of the therapeutic setting and in confidence. It is because we have aligned with our clients that they trust us, listen, and often make good use of our attention. They trust us to say what we see in a way that allows them to take it in and make use of it. They trust us to act in their best interests and not to harm. Sometimes our help is in the form of support. Sometimes it is in the work of exploration, and sometimes it is in helping our clients know when to sit back and when to take action. And each of us have a different threshold that tells us when we must act. I crossed that threshold for the first time in August 1989, the day after my 18th birthday. The first meaningful thing I did as a legal adult was to get myself arrested for soliciting a citizen to perform unlawful acts against public property. This came about because a mentor and recently disabled friend of mine asked me if I wanted to take a road trip to protest the lack of access for people with disabilities in the town of Sparks, Nevada, of all places. Looking back on this adventure, I'm not sure how we did it, but somehow we managed to pack up both of our wheelchairs and our 75-pound plus service dogs and all of the auxiliary equipment that goes along with being disabled and female into my new-to-me 13-year-old Honda Accord, and we hit the road. When we arrived, we came upon a group of about 30 activists gathered on a street corner, seemingly in the middle of nowhere. They had signs that said in big letters things like, "Disability Pride," or "We Exist," with an exclamation mark. They were chanting things like, "Independence is our right. Independence is our right." Now, I would like to tell you that I was inspired by the scene, but at the time I had not quite integrated being disabled into my identity just yet. I felt deflated, my narcissistic sensibilities injured. Is this it? Did I drive all this way in pain and discomfort, exhausting my limited resources on gas, trashing my new used car in the process, pulling the wheelchairs in and out and repacking them every time we needed to stop and pee along the way, to stand in this small band of misfits in 113-degree heat in the middle of nowhere to do what? To protest what? My thoughts raced. But with my friend Margaret's encouragement and sensing her enthusiasm for the cause, we pulled out the wheelchairs and got on that street corner. Tolerating the heat was one thing. Tolerating being part of this group was another. We were ragged around the edges, unsightly, disorganized. This could not be my group, I thought. We have no power. We don't even have a critical mass. This was a lost cause. So there I was, sitting in my wheelchair, doing nothing, doing worse than nothing, judging and criticizing my own people who were trying their best to make a difference in whatever way they could. As I was lost in these thoughts, a woman in a power wheelchair rolled up alongside me. Her legs were sticking straight out in front of her due to spasticity. I noticed that she was holding something. It was a sledgehammer. "What are you going to do with that?" I yelled over. I'm going to use it to make a curb cut here. Do you think I should do it? She asked. And maybe it was the energy of the crowd, or my desire to have something big happen. I heard myself yelling, "Do it! Do it!" I admired the fortitude of this woman, the chutzpah, and looking into her eyes, doing a quick body scan, I knew that she probably couldn't physically lift the sledgehammer, but she didn't need to. Her actions had created a tool inside me that day that was more powerful than any object of demolition. "Do it! Do it!" I yelled even louder. And then I was arrested. I looked over at my partner in crime with her sledgehammer in hand, just in time to see her legs being hit, and I imagine subsequently broken with a police baton. I knew in an instant that the police had interpreted her spasticity, her disability, her very body as an act of resisting arrest. As I sat in the jail cell that day, wondering what would happen, if anything would come of this day, I knew I had been changed. I was released and the charges were dropped. They were dropped against all of us because, ironically, the jail wasn't accessible. We couldn't use the bathrooms. They didn't know what to do with us, and they certainly didn't want to clean up the mess, so they let us go. What we were fighting for that day was a curb cut. A little thing, maybe, but one that grants us entry into the public sphere, one that gives us a chance to cross the street, to be in the street at all. But really, it was a fight for existence, to have our issues count, to be treated like human beings, to show that every life deserves equal and fair treatment, to demonstrate that there is no life that is unworthy of life itself. Independence is our right. Independence is our right. Less than a year later, in 1990, one of the most comprehensive civil rights bills of our times was signed into law, the Americans with Disabilities Act. I'd like to think our small protest had something to do with it. The reality is that people with disabilities had organized, mobilized for years. These small protests were occurring, and some big ones too, that ultimately resulted in legislation that has had a profound impact on many lives. Americans with Disabilities. We now had a name and some laws protecting us, which has over time made some attitudinal change possible. Our political actions have made a difference. A few days after the Sparks, Nevada protest, I found myself sitting in my first college seminar, a political science class at Sonoma State. The first day of college, and we were talking about the United States and its role in World War II. Wide-eyed, bright-eyed, 18 and 19-year-olds sitting around a seminar table, horrified to learn that our government knew that Jews and other minorities in Eastern Europe were being systematically slaughtered and failed to act. We did nothing. We did nothing. I was stunned, stupefied at this new knowledge, this new awareness of our capacity to tolerate, perpetuate, engage in, or be silent in the face of such evil. We knew and we did not say. We knew and we did not take action. How could this be? Sensing my distress, outrage, and feelings of hopelessness, as my professor was packing up his briefcase to go for the day, he looked at me wearily and said, "There must be a special place in hell for those who knew and did not say." Psychotherapy itself is an act, a radical political act that is capable of influencing great change. When we empower others to trust their feelings and perceptions, to act in their own best interests, to understand themselves and their motivations on deeper levels, we are fostering strength and resilience. We are contributing to a system where thoughtful, empowered people flourish and live the lives to the fullest. As clinicians, we are in a position to be powerful and effective agents of change, but that requires wrestling with the part of the psyche that pulls on us to do nothing, in fact, implores us to keep our heads down and stay safe. Operating from this place, we cannot move and become stuck in the psychological concrete that stands between us and action. It is because we have some specialized knowledge and understanding of human behavior and its consequences that we need to take action. Let's let our specialized knowledge, coupled with our action, be our sledgehammers. While I'm not interested in being arrested again for soliciting citizens to destroy public property, I am interested in motivating us to cross the threshold to action. Let's pick up our sledgehammers and use them with gusto. Let's say what we see. Let's protect our clients and the public that we have a duty to serve. As clinicians, we need to take an active role in educating the public and our clients about the true dangers of this current administration and its leader. They need to understand that based on his behavior, his symptoms, it is unlikely that he can go from being the racist we love to hate into the reformed sinner we love to love. We still live in a culture where we can take action, and because we know what we know, we must act. So where is my threshold for action in light of the harsh realities that we are facing now? Maybe it was Trump's making fun of a disabled reporter to get a laugh. Or maybe it was listening to client after client expressing their feelings of deep despair. As one client put it, it's like being raped all over again with every action he takes, every hateful word he says. Or maybe it's the marked increase in depression and anxiety, traumatic response, suicidal ideation, and hopelessness in the year since he was elected. Something has caused you to show up today. Please nurture whatever it is and keep going.